Well, for folks who were listening to us on the first round, you heard me get the conversation started. I'm lucky enough here to be with Andy Mann. We had a great conversation. We talked about a lot of different things. Andy, we talked about your history in technology, some really good stuff about the importance of automation, analytics, the disintegration of IT. We got to touch on a great chat you had with Sir Richard Branson and stuff you learned from that. So Andy, let's just reintroduce yourself to the audience here just to make sure for folks that didn't already catch it. Where do we find you online?
So you'll find me online, so mostly at Andy Mann, so AndiMann on Twitter. I do have my own personal blog. It's pleasediscuss.com/AndyMann. But if you just Google my name, I'm all over the place. I'm indiscriminately prolific, so you can just find me anywhere.
There we go. So Andy, we covered a lot of really cool ground in the first part of our chat, and now I just want to get to the fun one, and I'm going to start with the question that I always love to ask people because everybody has a different angle that they approach it on, and that is, what is DevOps?
Ha ha! Oh, I hate that question. Look, I take a canonical view. I take a sort of a canonical view of DevOps. I look at it as a method of collaboration, communication, and integration between development and operations to deliver better software faster. That's sort of how I define it. I think the movement issues definition. And I've spoken with a number of people about this, including Patrick Dubois, the grandfather of DevOps. Part of the idea is that definitions restrict growth. And so they decided they didn't really want to define DevOps because they didn't want to put it in a box. In the end, I'm not sure if that's worked out for us because a lot of people are defining it the way that they feel it should be defined. For me, it's that fundamental connection, the human element of collaboration, communication, integration between dev and ops.
And that's the right way to define it, truthfully. Like you've nailed it there. I always tell people it's like the Buddha. They say that if you find someone and they tell you that they're a DevOps engineer, then you must kill them because they are not, right?
Ah, yes.
There is no such thing. The ever classic, like, we're seeking a DevOps manager to build a DevOps team, and you just cringe when you look at it and you think, my God, we are so far from what we really need to be approaching this from, which is, where's the pain points that we've got today? What are the constraints we're facing? What's the true business, value that we're gathering from it, right? Because DevOps is, while it embraces tons of technology process, it really is a business feature, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and we need to be aware of that in IT generally. We've been talking about business IT alignment for the longest possible time, and we're still, in a lot of ways, not that good at it. And Agile helped because our part of the theories of Agile is really having that business liaison, having the business continually involved in the development cycle so that you're not taking requirements 6 months later, delivering them, and then finding out they were entirely wrong. So that's a good start, but we're still not there. And I think DevOps helps take us down that path a little bit further, maybe not all the way, but a little bit further.
So I think that in the challenges that it solves, let's kind of go through some of them. Visibility, this is a big piece of it. Visibility across teams. Where do you see DevOps and just newer approaches to more rapidly delivering software and business value? Like, how do we get visibility across disparate teams and different groups?
Yeah, the visibility thing is really important. It is a big part of DevOps because, part of that theory of collaboration and communication, we've talked about there being a wall between development and operations and software we've thrown over the wall. Operations would have no idea what's coming. They would have no visibility into the development pipeline, even into the business plan. It's interesting also, it works the other way around. Development often had no visibility into the impact of their code. They'd sit there and they'd write code to spec, and they'd write it exactly to spec, and then they'd push it out. Operations would deploy it and run it, But meanwhile, development's gone on to another project and doing other work, and they never really get to see the results of what they've done, whether they did it well or whether they were sort of part of growing the business or part of hurting the business. Having that visibility, even just between dev and ops, connects both sides to the business better. You can understand your operations, and I may be coming from a place of bias. Historically, I was a data center operator for many years, and I had really good, broad visibility into everything the organization did because I was running the computer systems that the organization depended on every day. I knew which applications were more important than others, which services I had to focus on getting back up after an outage first, these sorts of things. Whereas in a development environment, you don't necessarily have that straight away. With DevOps, you do. With DevOps, you build it, you run it, is one of the mantras. I think that's Werner Vogels from Amazon said that, something like that. And so as a developer now, you see the impact of your code. You understand, well, when I put that into code, all of a sudden, response time went down and my customers started to raise lots of tickets. I guess I did something wrong. Or the corollary, of course. You know, when you put code in and you go, oh, wow, all of a sudden our user signups have doubled. Well, I did something good today. You know, so it becomes very personal, very human as well, which is another part of DevOps, is having personal involvement, commitment, accountability for your own work, responsibility for your own work, responsibility across the team to others as well. If you did something that made their life bad, you got to make that right. You know, these are the parts, some of the sort of philosophical empathy aspects of DevOps. And having visibility into what the next person in your team is doing, whether she's writing code, deploying code, maybe she's a DBA, security specialist, you know, because in a large enterprise especially, DevOps doesn't start with dev and doesn't end with ops. And you get to visibility across the whole process, then all of a sudden you're starting to really understand what is my impact on the world, how am I helping my business, and you can make independent decisions at that point, which means that you can do it better, faster, cheaper. You just fix problems. You don't wait for a plan to fix problems because you already know what's the best thing to do. There's so many upsides of this movement towards DevOps. Of things like, you know, visibility, accountability to each other, empowerment, self-directed teaming. There's so many different aspects to it. Just the human side, we haven't even talked about technology, that there's incredible benefit, and it really does break down those silos, but it gives you that visibility.
Yeah, and I think we can even start in small ways, right? And I think that's the biggest fear that people have is they start to look at what it would take to get there. And it becomes like, if you're told, look, I've never run before. So I'm going to train for a marathon. And you look at this, 8-month training plan, and the first thing you do is you just look and think, you know, you start looking way down the road. You look at the 7 months in, you're like, there's no way that I'm going to be able to run 38 kilometers on a Sunday after having run 22 on a Friday. And you're already walking into it with trepidation. You're already coming into the approach with fear. So small iterative pieces are part of the approach. And I find, you know, we talk about DevOps, I've got teams that I've worked with that I've had trouble even just getting ops, like getting one side of the operations team to work with the other one. And automation is the only way, you know, embracing automation even at the smallest place can then make that expansion easier. Because if you in operations haven't embraced ops, or sorry, automation rather, then, you know, speaking to the development team isn't going to do you much more good other than being aware that you've got more manual processes that are about to hit your camp.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually one slide when I do sort of advisory workshops, and I do a lot of advisory workshops. You know, I'm working at Splunk as a chief technology advocate, but you know, a lot of the time I'm out with customers and just doing advisory on cloud or on DevOps or, you know, nothing to do with Splunk or what we do. And one of the slides that I have, it's just got two lines in about 48 points, and it says, find a problem, fix a problem. You don't need to fix every problem in one go. And you're right, these incremental steps to streamline your process, to automate your tasks, to automate your end-to-end, you can take simple steps. You can find, you know, automation is a great example of this. You know, when you mentioned that, and I absolutely agree. Automation is, you know, if you want to talk technology in DevOps, automation is absolutely key. And a lot of people will look at that and go, well, my end-to-end process involves five different departments. Yeah, funny story, when you talk about the you can't just get ops. You know, one of the theories in DevOps is this concept of having a two-pizza team. If your team is too big to feed with two pizzas, then it's just too big. Whereas I've been to large enterprises where you couldn't feed the team management with two pizzas, let alone the individual practitioners. So, you know, you need to break it down. If you have a long end-to-end process, that, like you say, if you try and think, oh, I want to automate that all at once, it's just too hard. And you fail before you start because it's just not going to work. But every process can be broken down into a series of tasks. And you find just two tasks, one after the other, that you can automate. All of a sudden, you've got process automation. And then you can build on that, and you can iterate. And yeah, DevOps is very much about that iteration formula. And so really is the, you know, theories of innovation, you know, trying something out, trying the MVP, the minimum viable product, and then iterating on that and adding some extra goodness, making it a little bit better, you know, solving just one more use case, one more problem. And you can get some amazing stuff done and do it really quickly if you use this sort of sprint mentality rather than try and do a big bang and solve everything at once.
Yeah, and often you see what they call the water scrum fall, where people, they start to embrace it. It's challenging, and you have to work with maybe a project management office that hasn't fully embraced, you know, agile methodologies and scrum as a practice. But you can as a development and operations or security team, like even within the small pocket groups within technology, you can still embrace those practices and satisfy the corporate project reporting, which is traditionally still like a 12-month plan, right? And that on its face is dangerous. You know, the fact that we use a 12-month planning cycle and yet we, you know, even quarterly can be challenging, you know, but yet as a business we're required to, because that's sort of the financial reporting is meant to be done on 12-month runs. But yeah, it goes so far against small iterative, you know, approaches. So it's tough. Like, how do you plan an IT when you've got a CIO who's given you a 12-month budget and telling you to know in October how you're going to spend it starting in January when you haven't even gotten to December and spent last year?
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually wrote about that in my book, The Innovative CIO, about the idea of how an annual strategy is just toxic to innovation, because innovation doesn't happen on an annual basis. And so, you know, I talked about the idea of rolling strategy. So yes, you have a 1 to 3 year plan, maybe a 3 to 5 year plan. There's a lot of upside in having vision. It's important to know where you're going, where your final destination should be. So having, like you say, that long-term strategic vision, the strategic long-term plan, it's still important. But have a flexible rolling plan as well that ties into that, that lets you revisit. And I'm not talking about, you know, I'm not talking about rogue strategy here. I'm talking about the senior leadership engaging in this, engaging in a rolling strategy, so that once a year they come up and they review the annual strategy and they plug that into their 3 to 5 year plan and make sure it's adjusted and tweaked the right way, so that, you know, you're going to get where you need to go. But every 3 months, or maybe even every month, get together and revisit every element of that strategy and understand, well, what's not working anymore, because all of a sudden a competitor's popped up that I didn't consider, you know, a month ago. You know, 1 month into my 12-month plan, all of a sudden I've got an existential threat from a competitor. If I'm only revisiting my plan once every 12 months, that's too late. I'm going to be out of business in 11 months. And so I think there's an opportunity for IT leadership to do the same thing. you know, they still need to take direction on it for an annual, like you say, annual budgets, for example, even quarterly budgets. They still need to take direction and plug that into the overall corporate goals and understand how that fits. But at the same time, they need to have the flexibility to be able to course correct continually. You think about a large ship, and I use the term course correct very advisedly. You think about a large ship in the ocean, and it just keeps going in one direction all the time.
Right.
In actual fact, you'll find that the captain of any large ship like that is correcting that course on a continual basis. Fine-tuned adjustments. They know where they're going. They know the long term. In 2 months' time, I'm going to be in Kuala Lumpur. Fantastic. But they also know the short term. They know that they have to maneuver around this particular storm. They have to maneuver through this particular current. They have to make micro adjustments because they're getting pushed off course by winds of change, if you will, if I can mix metaphors horribly. This is the sort of thing which IT can do and which Agile and DevOps actually helps them to do.
Yeah, the idea of tacking, which becomes, the pivot that Eric Ries sort of, I think he kind of coined the phrase with the idea of the lean methodologies, the lean startup idea, and being able to pivot. It doesn't mean changing direction. It means putting it back on course with an altered course, like a course correction, as you say, but it's simply because you've embraced adjustment from an external factor. And you're adjusting course as a result of another external or even an internal factor. It's not that you've gone away from strategy. You're still pointing towards strategy, but just the path to get there may have deviated slightly.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think adopting things like Agile, adopting things like DevOps gives leadership the ability to do those sorts of course corrections, where historically in a waterfall environment, it didn't. And yeah, something like an agile fall or a water scrum fall or whatever you'd like to call it, you can start to do that as well. You can have small, short iterations within your waterfall process. I certainly wouldn't advise that as ideal, but it's a step in the right direction that can get results.
And you hit on something that's important, and you talked about revisiting it. Simply going forward isn't going to gain a success, because how do you know you've succeeded? What is the importance of looking back, the retrospective? Like, how do you coach people on embracing that part of iterative approaches and agile methodologies?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. And certainly I love the sort of work that's being done in the DevOps community right now around the idea of a blameless postmortem. And so I see guys like J. Paul Reed talking about this, and others as well, the idea of when you get to review what you've done, and in terms of a blameless postmortem, we're talking mainly in terms of troubleshooting and triage and post-incident review. But this applies equally, I think, to any kind of historical review, is to try and take the blame game out of it. Because this never helps. And I've worked in an organization many years ago where this was very much part of their philosophy, was no blame, just fix. And that, I think, is a really, really powerful way to look at readjusting your strategy and your approach to delivering software, to delivering business outcomes, is to understand that it doesn't matter to a large degree what caused us to get where we are. What matters is how are we going to get most efficiently and effectively to where we need to be. And in terms of a postmortem, that can be as simple as, well, here's why it happened. Not who did it, but why it happened to the best of our knowledge. And here's what we can do to at least prevent that particular problem happening again. Working forwards, not working backwards. So taking that historical view and really using it with a lens to make things better rather than to find fault. And I think that's a really powerful way to look at readjusting your strategy forward. That gets people involved, because if you're just looking to blame someone and looking to find fault with what went wrong, then people won't want to get involved. They will sit there and they'll cringe in a corner because they don't want to get called on. It's like being at school and not having the answers to the homework. You just don't want to get called on. Whereas if it's an open discussion looking for ideas to move forward. You get more ideas. There's also elements, just by the way, of diversity in this, of different cultures and genders reacting differently to, you know, pressures around your accusation or blame, you know, these sorts of things as well. So that when you have that more open, collaborative, inviting culture in your organization, you actually get more value out of a diverse culture as well, because it's more inviting for people who might otherwise be less aggressive to speak up in these situations, are actually having their opinion heard. And so you actually get so much more value out of this open, collaborative, looking forward than you would ever get out of a post-mortem blame game kind of revisiting.
Yeah, and I think the phrase that I've heard, or and I always tell people, when you see somebody who is sort of critical, not in the nice way, but, you know, so the phrase is, you know, people often look into others for the thing which they despise in themselves, and they tend to, you know, anthropomorphize somebody else's activity to an emotion that they're trapped on or feeling. And so when you do find groups that have challenging, challenges with collaboration, it's good to kind of like not just, you know, set it aside and say, well, it won't work, but like let's find the source of that. And yeah, openness, transparency, it's absolutely tantamount to getting to that goal. And you've hit on a couple of the key ones, and, you know, we talked about lean. You know, that's obviously, lean as a methodology, I'm a massive fan. I literally reread every 4 to 6 months Lean Startup as part of my sort of group of Bibles. Other one is my daily mantra: what would Eli Goldratt do? It is the goal, you know, theory of constraints. You've hit on it. Of course, DevOps is wrapped around it. Find the constraints, you know, attack that, remove it, move on to the next constraint. Don't think of it. You know, look at the overall system, but think in terms of constraints throughout. What are some good resources? And one of my favorite questions I love to ask, you know, what's on your bookshelf? If I were to say, Andy, I need to know 3 books that I should read that are going to give me the ability to execute the vision that you've got for myself, you know, or help me to do that. What are the kind of top titles?
So I'm not going to do I think it was Elle Macpherson, an Australian model, once said something along the lines of, I've never read a book that I've not written. So I would certainly plug my own books.
Of course.
But the better options, I would absolutely start with The Phoenix Project, as I'm sure you would as well. Kevin Baer, Gene Kim.
And George Spafford. Yeah.
George Spafford. definitely The Phoenix Project, fantastic. When you look at seminal literature, yes, The Goal is brilliant. Applied very much to the manufacturing environment, but this is where DevOps is sort of coming from these days, is applying these manufacturing theories of waste and throughput and the things you were talking about there. They're fantastic. Honestly, I get so much of my information just from people's blogs, things like IT Revolution, Syscon, the large volume of writings on DevOps.com, but also the individual practitioners. I'm at the moment getting really into Matthew Skelton talking about the importance of logging and analytics in DevOps. At various times, like I said, I've been reading J. Paul Reed and some of his blog and content. The O'Reilly books, I picked up a stack of little O'Reilly books. DevOps in Practice, which is a couple of case studies from J. Paul Reed. Fascinating, really short books, by the way. These are like almost ebooks.
Oh, cool.
Compliance at Speed was another one. Mark Lustig, talking about how you can do rugged DevOps, you know, apply compliance and audit theory to theories around DevOps.
I love that phrase, rugged DevOps. I'm going to use that.
Yeah, rugged DevOps. It's the whole thing. Because people talk about DevOps as being a bunch of cowboys, but it doesn't have to be that way. Some people put DevOps in opposition to, you know, traditional IT and service management discipline, but it doesn't need to be that way. And so the idea of rugged DevOps is, you can lock it down and be strong with your security, but still be fast and agile with your process. The other one that I really got a lot out of, and again, it's one of these little tiny O'Reilly booklets, and I'm literally looking at it on my desk right now, The Human Side of Postmortems by Dave Swieback. Again, it's about this blameless postmortem, about getting to ways to go forward rather than finding ways to blame people. So, yeah, these are the sorts of things I've been reading most recently. It's tough, though. I follow a lot of amazing people on Twitter, and I learn every day just from, even from throwaway lines, you know. All of a sudden get me thinking about stuff that I hadn't been thinking about.
Yeah.
So engaging with the community, I think, is probably the most important way of learning around DevOps.
That's cool. And that's, yeah, it's the heart of everything. Every success that I've had has been, I'll say, risen on the backs of others because of the community of folks that are around us that inspire us, help us in so many different ways. And it's, like I said, I'm a regular reader of Twitter because I love the sort of real time passion that's continuously going on around us. And if you step away from it for 2, 3 days, 4 days, whatever, you know, you go away for a vacation, you come back, it's exactly where you left it because it's now. And I love that because, you know, there's just so much great stuff that's continuously going on. This is my goal, you know, very soon is to somehow corral Gene, Kevin, and George all on here at the same time, which I know will be probably like trying to get the stones to play in my backyard, but I'm sure that I can do it. Only because every single guest I've had on thus far has mentioned the Phoenix Project as one of their first reads, as like a key read.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So and, you know, I count Gene and Jim and Gene and Kevin and George as mates of mine, and they are there. If you ever get them on, have fun. They're great guys to just shoot the breeze with, and they're so smart. You'll get a lot out of that, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, that's great. And then... of course, you know, you talked about your book, The Innovative CIO, Visible Ops, also a great read. Like there's so much good information that's out there. I'm very, you know, honored to have you on and to count you among folks that I can reach out to and chat with, because it's neat to see that you've done this in practice, you've delivered, and you've seen the challenges amongst it. And I think that's the biggest thing is watching folks that have gotten through the challenges and gotten on the other side. And there's always a freshman class. There's always a new group of folks that are ready to start again. And the more we go through it, I think the better we get at it. And it's great to share that journey with people. So
yeah,
tell me.
Absolutely. And I would just say, Eric, I feel privileged to even be on this podcast, connecting with people like you who are so active in the community, so engaged. And for me, this is where I learn as well, is connecting with people like you who are active and engaged in the community. It's all the ability to share these information and views and come up with new ideas together. It's so exciting. It's invigorating.
That's great. Thank you. And I'm going to ask you before we go here, tell us about Sageable. You know, I was excited when I saw you, make the jump, and, you know, it was that sort of like, oh, there's got to be something cool coming. And I tell you, you delivered on that. So tell us a bit about Sageable and what that's been for you for the last little while, you know, along with, you know, the stuff you've done, of course, with Splunk.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I left my last role, because I felt like I had a lot to give and to share around, especially DevOps and digital transformation, cloud computing. I wanted to start up my own sort of consulting and advisory business. I called it Sageable, and a very pointed name. Not that I'm a sage, just that I can learn to be one. And so, you know, I'm Sageable. And you know, that was the idea behind it, was to try and use my knowledge to help people learn. And so I've been reasonably effective with that, with a number of engagements. But then, you know what, Splunk came along and said, you know, Andy, we really need you to do some work for us more on a full-time basis. And so more or less Sageable is shelved. I still do some a little bit of consulting on for essentially special projects. In fact, I'm about to take a call with some old mates of mine just to shoot the breeze and to understand a little bit more about their business and their challenges and try and help them out with some challenges that they've got. Mostly, though, I'm 100% focused on my work at Splunk these days, which is advocating for technology adoption and, you know, innovation to my customers, but also advocating to Splunk on how to make our software better and service those customers better and deliver better experiences. So it's an interesting time for me. I'm going through a lot of change, but I tell you, Splunk especially is providing me with a platform that I don't miss being able to go out with Sageable and talk to lots of different people and solve lots of different problems, because at Splunk, that's exactly what I'm doing. And I'm doing it with an amazing team behind me. So yeah, all the greatest plans of mice and men sometimes go awry. I don't know if Sageable will be a full-time venture for me eventually. For the time being, Splunk is where I'm at, and I'm enjoying the heck out of it.
Excellent. Well, with that, Andy, this has been great. Thank you very much. We've had two great sessions together, and I'm really glad to have had the opportunity to have you on. Of course, let's remind everybody where we can find you online if people want to keep the conversation going and have a chat with you. And also, have you got any events that are coming up over the course of the next few months?
Ah, yes, interestingly. I will be doing a number of events over the next few months. Firstly, where can you find me online? Well, at Andy Mann on Twitter, obviously. That's A-N-D-I-M-A-N-N. If you Google Andy Mann, I'm blogging and posting articles all over the shop. I'm going to be at a couple of events. I would love to catch up with people in person. I'm going to try and get to DevOps Days in London. That's April 19th to 20th. I'm probably going to try and get to the DevOps Days Vancouver as well. That's April 15th to 16th. After that, there's a bunch of stuff that's potentially on my calendar. DevOps Day Seattle, DockerCon in June in San Francisco is going to be very cool. Monitorama, I've never been, but I've watched it from afar online. It looks like a fantastic event. So I'm going to try and get up to Portland in late June for that. And a couple of big ones as well. EMC World in May, Cisco Live in July. You know, these are some of the things that I've tentatively got on my calendar at the moment. I'd love to catch up with any of your listeners in person. They can always hit me up on Twitter if they want to catch me up at a conference or anywhere else.
Will I find you at Interop again this year? I know last year we got a chance to meet up there, so that was great. But have you got a presence there at all this year?
I don't think I will be at Interop this year. It was a great conference last year. I'm still working on whether I might be able to. I'm looking at the Information Week CIO Summit, which is co-located with Interop and Cloud Connect, and that's a fantastic event too. A lot of my mates, and my C-level CIO mates turn up there, so it's like a family reunion for me. So I'm going to try and get along to that. We'll see how that works.
Good stuff. Well, Andy, thank you very much for sharing your vision and your stories and you know, both through your work online and right here. This has been great. And thank you to everybody. Of course, for folks that want to continue the conversation with myself, you can do so in the Green Circle community. I'm Disco Posse in there. You can find me at Disco Posse on Twitter. If you want to, of course, subscribe to the podcast, if you haven't already, go to gcondemand.io, and that'll have the links to subscribe through iTunes. You can also get subscribed on Stitcher. You can have it in your Ford automobile if you'd like to carry it around with you everywhere you go, or any old iOS or Android device. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you all again soon. And thanks very much, Andy.
Thank you.